The fact it purposely kind of places all these different men in her story, but the movie doesn't need to tell us anything about these men other than they are really creepy, and this is the experience of girls and women all over the world.
It's really kind of intimate and non-judgmental. It's quite a remarkable piece of filmmaking.
And also the young actress who plays her was just outstanding.
You can either notice it or you can ignore it, because that is so true to real life, which I think this film excels at, is mirroring reality.
Welcome everyone to the Flix Watcher podcast. I'm Kobe, and today I'm joined by Em.
Hi.
Claire.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. Yes, I got it right.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello everybody, welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today we have Claire and Em. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Sure. Hi, my name is Em. I am from the podcast Verbal Diorama. It is the podcast all about the history and legacy of movies you know and movies you don't. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I am a podcaster and a writer, and I do all sorts of crazy things.
crazy things. You do the film stories, where you put the spotlight on a lot of film podcasters, which I'm sure is very much appreciated.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's obviously not the main thing that I do. I think it's the main thing that a lot of people know me for, but it's kind of, I kind of look at it like that's kind of 10% of what I do, and the other 90% is Verbal Diorama and all of the work that comes with a podcast that's incredibly research heavy and is solo hosted just by me.
Yeah. It's tough to do a monologue podcast. I've never done one, but I think just the effort and
the energy as well you bring to it.
Absolutely.
It's an interesting experience to be constantly talking to yourself all the time, which is why I love coming onto other podcasts, because I actually get to talk to other human beings for a
and
change.
Also not do the editing.
Oh, yeah, that. Oh, my God. Yeah, please don't tell me I have to do that as well.
We've got another voice here. It's Claire. Claire, hello.
Hi, hello. So I'm Claire. I'm a co-host of the podcast W Rated, where we watch the worst rated movies based off the IMDb Bottom 100. And I used to also write for film stories, but I'm currently on a bit of a gap year from film writing. Because I've temporarily moved to Dublin for a year. So focusing on the podcast, but little temp on the writing.
Don't they have films in Dublin? I don't know what's going on here.
They do, but I don't know anyone in the film circuit critic world, so I don't know where they watch these films. I'm just
cinemas,
yeah. I've been to three cinemas in Ireland now in the 3 months I've lived here, so I am getting better. By the time the year's up, maybe I'll have written a review.
I'm sure the most part of that is because we are in lockdown still-ish.
So. Yeah, we had a curfew up until mid-January, so everything had to shut by 8 p.m, which did make watching films incredibly difficult.
Well, tell us about, so W-rated, we had someone on here recently for our Cats episode who's going through each of the Adam Sandler films from their Happy Madison. I'm sure some of those appear in the W-rated.
They do.
The question is, why are you doing this to yourself?
Well, my lovely co-host Daisy and I just got talking one day on Twitter about film challenges we were both doing, and she had decided she was going to watch all 100 films on the bottom 100 list. I kind of half joking said, I hope you're gonna capture it somewhere, podcast, blog, whatever. And she said she'd love to do a podcast but didn't know how. I'd always wanted to do a podcast, but I'm not as brave as Em and didn't want to do it on my own. And so a beautiful partnership was formed, and now we are slowly torturing ourselves. But it's a nice thing, because our aim with every film is to look at what was good about the film. We're not there to laugh at the film and kind of go dig worse dirt up. We're there to think, is there some genuine merit to this? Does it deserve to be on the list? What are the good things? What maybe went wrong? And I'd say at the moment we're about 50-50 on films that we liked and films that we didn't.
Okay. Well, you brought Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always to this pod booth. Can you tell us first of all why you chose it? And then I'm going to get the timer up and you've got 60 seconds or less to tell us the synopsis.
Okay. So I chose this film because I think it is one of the best films that came out in 2020 and in recent years, one of the best. And I think it kind of came and went very quickly. It didn't really get the recognition that I think a film of this nature deserves, and it didn't stay in the conversation as long as it should have for what I think is quite a thought-provoking film. And it's always nice to bring films from female filmmakers about female issues to light a little bit more, because they don't get the attention that some of the big smashier action-y movies maybe get in the world.
Fair play. And your timer starts now.
Yeah, so Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always follows teenager Autumn, who has to travel across America to New York City in order to obtain a legal termination of an unwanted pregnancy. She's joined on the trip by her cousin Skylar, and due to some misinformation, it ends up being a longer trip than either maybe had imagined, and we get a shocking insight into the workings of female healthcare.
Well done. I should say in the States as well.
Yes.
In different countries it might be different, or different states mm-hmm. in the States it might be different. Helen, you were quite excited when this choice, I mean, initially we were going to go for Rocket Man, but then that dropped off Netflix and that's what happens.
quite a different film.
But then you're quite like, yes, in a way. Never, Really, Sometimes, Always, Helen.
Yeah, so this had been on my watch list for quite a while, well, since 2020, and someone very helpfully on Twitter put a PSA saying, it's on Netflix, and I think I actually watched it that afternoon. That's how keen I was to watch it. And it's just an excellent drama. The kind of sickliness of men permeates, like, everywhere, and the central performance is just incredible. It's like the last taboo, I think, for film, especially in America, is subjective abortions. And it's a really kind of intimate and non-judgmental. We're almost kind of like looking in, and it's done in such a really delicate way that it never feels like it's got an agenda or anything. It's just, this is kind of the way it is, and this is how she's kind of navigating. And she kind of comes up to all these challenges along the way, as if the main part of the challenge wasn't harsh enough. She keeps kind of getting these little knockbacks here and then, and just her resilience is just really inspiring for what is she, what was 16, 17?
17, I think, yeah.
I think it's a film that definitely deserves more people to kind of see it and watch it, because it's quite a remarkable piece of filmmaking.
Had you seen it before, Em?
I hadn't seen it before. I'd heard of it, but I guess I'm one of those people who prefers the big, noisy action movies. And I am the sort of person, I don't tend to stay away from dramas, but I tend to stay away from stuff that's going to emotionally affect me.
Mm.
And to be honest, I didn't even know this was on Netflix. So the fact it was on there, and obviously when it came up that's what Claire's choice was, I kind of thought to myself, well, this is actually kind of the ideal opportunity for me to actually sit and watch something like this, because I probably wouldn't maybe have watched this.
Mm.
Not that I didn't know about it, and not that I'm, you know, against the subject matter or anything like that. It's just not normally the sort of thing that I would personally watch. So I kind of took this as an opportunity to actually maybe watch something important for a change.
Did it rise to that important stature that you held in your head?
Yeah. I mean, it's I knew what the subject matter was. Mm-hmm. I kind of, in my head, I kind of thought it would be upsetting and, you know, slightly disconcerting and all of that sort of stuff. I kind of wasn't prepared for how it made me feel, in a sense of how uncomfortable I felt thinking, kind of looking back to my own sort of teen years and the way that men treat young girls. And it was almost like a kind of look back to the past in a way, which is obviously, you know, any woman can tell you experiences that they've had in the past. You know, you remember things and it's, you know, you remember that feeling of uncomfortableness when a man looks at you in a certain way or touches you in a certain way. And then you kind of think, well, that's still happening to girls of this age. And then, yeah, on all of the other issues as well with the Planned Parenthood thing in America. And
as you talked about the creepiness aspect, I think that's one thing that I can imagine a lot of internet, the gammon on the internet being angry. men aren't like this. And I just think there's a few instances. This is the second time I watched it, and I missed a few of the instances the first time, but or I just didn't remember, forgot them. But there's like in the supermarket where Skylar just says, "Oh, it looks like you're having a party," and then the guy there is creepily at least three times her age. Like, "Well, why don't you come afterwards? We can wait for you." Yeah. And then there's the co-worker kissing both their hands as they're handing over the cash. And then there's the guy they meet on the bus, Jasper, who's like ostensibly friendly, but also he's definitely got an ulterior motive.
He wants something out of his friendliness.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the father figure is
Was the father
creepy.
Or stepfather? I wasn't sure.
It's intentionally ambiguous.
Ambiguous, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the first thing was when she's playing, Autumn's playing guitar in the school recital and people like shouting at her. Rude words at her, so you get the impression that she throws water over one of them. So it's sprinkled in there all the way through the experiences that she's having. And like I say, it's good to hear you say it's not unique to this film. It's not shining a light here, but the experiences that she's having then as a foundation. Then on top of that, she's having to go through these experiences to try and get this termination sorted in a safe manner, and it's kind of horrible.
I think that's one of the brilliances of the film, though, that obviously, and it was my second watch too, you do notice those kind of creepy men more on the second time because you know where the story's going. But what I love is that that is in no way the focus of the film. There is at no point in the film the focus on who is the father, what has she been through in that kind of emotional turmoil, how did she end up pregnant. It doesn't really go into detail on those experiences that are happening to these young women. And I think it's both brilliant because it means that just Autumn's story is the main focus the whole way through. This is about Autumn's story. And I also think it points to the realism that Em was kind of talking about, where unfortunately for most young women, they're not unusual experiences. So they're not something that we would expect a whole film to be dedicated to, because unfortunately they are things that just happen every day in every town in the world to young women. So I love that it is just sprinkled in there, and that you can either notice it or you can ignore it, because that is so true to real life, which I think this film excels at, is mirroring reality.
They're like the minor moments in a much bigger story, and it's sort of not real time, but it's set on such a short period of time, and that's not unreasonable for that amount of meant to be that creepy. Let's just call him the creepy mate, and just that short period of time as well.
And the abortion termination storyline, we've had Dirty Dancing. That was a key plot point in Dirty Dancing, which is something I didn't really realise, obviously, the first couple of times when I watched it as a youngster. And then Juno is a film that ostensibly starts on that line. But I think this is shining a light on the situation in the States. And it'd be a different story if she was in Brooklyn straight away, and there would have been a different situation. It's kind of going to show that even in Pennsylvania, which is a fairly liberal state, it's an unfair experience if you want to go through the process. And the Planned Parenthood, was it Planned Parenthood had the first people, or was it the second?
No, they were the pro-life. So you had the first clinic was like a pro-life clinic.
Yeah.
But masquerading as a women's health clinic, kind of not making it clear.
And what their agenda, quote unquote, was.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a new wave of films that I've noticed myself in the last few years. You had this film, then there was a film that for some reason never came out in the UK called Unpregnant, which is an abortion road trip comedy, which is a very similar vein, a girl trying to get across America to a state where she can legally obtain an abortion. And then there is the film that won the Golden online at Venice Love on Month, the happening, which is set in 60s in France. But I think it, I think all these films in this kind of new genre, almost a very tiny genre of abortion films, I think when you look at what is happening in, we, I think we can have that kind of privileged thing of, well, women have their own rights and women's healthcare is really easily accessible. But if you're from,
so what you mean in the UK,
if you're from a country or a state yeah. where it is accessible, you can have that really privileged idea. And I think yeah. we forget that even in 2022 that isn't the same for everyone, even in really privileged countries like America. That might not be the case. So I think, you know, art is trying to remind us.
Yeah, it actually really opened up my eyes a lot to the situation, obviously, especially in America, because I had no idea that it was state dependent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I obviously don't live over there. So I know that there's obviously there's been legal issues with like Planned Parenthood and stuff like that. And I know there's been a lot of celebrity endorsement of like Planned Parenthood and you know, obviously, from my point of view, I've always been pro-choice, just generally, but I had no idea that it was state dependent. And so when she's in Pennsylvania and I think, oh, well, you know, Pennsylvania, that's where Philadelphia is. You know, you think that in a state like that, you would have at least some access to women's health and women's reproductive services. And the fact that these two young girls, you know, they're minors and they get on a bus and they have to go to New York for autumn's treatment. I just wanted to kind of reiterate on what Claire said. I felt that like the movie really showed a lot of empathy towards Autumn and her situation. But I also liked that the movie didn't focus on anything other than her story.
Yeah.
Because I think a movie like this could easily have had her monologue about, oh, I met this boy in so-and-so place and this is what happened. And the fact it purposely kind of places all these different men in her story that could be, but the movie actually doesn't need to tell us and it doesn't want to tell us anything about these men other than they are really creepy and this is the experience of so many girls and women and, you know, all over the world, because it's not about them. And it's never about them. It's about her and her choice and her life. And I just felt it was really compassionate towards her. And also the young actress who plays her was just outstanding. I felt like I wasn't watching a movie. I felt like I was watching a documentary about her life. I just felt like she act, and obviously I'm not a teenager. I don't know how teenagers act, but the fact that she's quite monosyllabic, she doesn't really talk, she doesn't, you know, go into too much detail. I felt like, well, maybe that's how teenagers today actually do speak.
That's one of the things I loved about the film, though, as well as the complete lack of dialogue. Obviously, yeah. there's dialogue in it, but it is such a dialogue-thin film, which I think really, again, is one of its strengths because it adds to that realism.
I think the... we should find out her name. Someone found out her name. Skylar was also great in this. Mm. But the denouement when she goes to a scene where she's asked by the Planned Parenthood's advisor those questions where she's supposed to answer never, rarely, sometimes, always. And she, you know, she doesn't even answer sometimes, but she kind of breaks down going back through the story. Mm. That scene is just like...
It's the refusal to cut, just the one shot tight on her face, utter refusal to cut. Like, what a difficult performance, what a brave filmmaking choice. And thank God it works, because that scene, obviously it's the titular scene anyway, but that is the heart of the movie. It would be a good movie without that scene, but I feel like that scene elevates it to an extraordinary movie because it's so simple. But it's raw, it's empathetic, it makes me cry, it makes me feel so much for that young girl. And it doesn't actually tell us anything because she refuses to tell us, but we know exactly what she's not telling us.
It's like it's feeding back into the, it's not telling the stories of the guys or the people that made her answer sometimes or rarely. It's, that's not about it's not what it's about.
And I think one of the best things about that scene is the voice we hear, the counsellor at Planned Parenthood is a real life social worker. They chose a real life social worker to ask those questions to make it as realistic as possible. And I do think you do hear her empathetic tone, and it does sound, I think that's how it adds into that documentary feel that Em was talking about by bringing those elements in.
At the top of the show, Helen, you said about the setbacks that she'd gone through. Can you talk a bit about those? You know, each step of the way, there's like, oh, another thing, and another thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the fact that she has to go to New York in the first place to have it done, and then they kind of keep running into things where she kind of gets there and they said, oh, well, they said you were this many weeks, but you're actually this many weeks, so we now, you know, it's going to take 2 days and it's going to cost this kind of more money, and it's just that it costs kind of money in the first place is like a big thing. Like, I kind of love that they steal some money from the creepy shop guy to pay for it, but to kind of get more money, they have to, Skylar has to sell herself to the guy that she meets on the bus. And it's just, you're watching it, you're thinking, what would I do in that situation? You know, how would I be resourceful to kind of like find the cash? You know, would I be able to lie and kind of convince my parents that I was staying at a friend's? And it's just, there's just so much responsibility and things you kind of have to think through. And he just manages to make these decisions like there and then in a really kind of calm way that I don't know if I would have any of her like kind of calmness and just straight thinking when I was that young.
Is there anything else guys want to say before we head to the scores?
I was just going to add that by not saying, so there's a thing that kind of people tend to have when they talk about abortions, and they kind of say, well, it's acceptable if like it's because you were raped, and people try and justify it. And by her not giving any information about why she's having it, it is deliberately saying that there doesn't need to be a reason, and there doesn't need to be a kind of badness about it to justify it. And I think that's really important, because there's a lot of language around women about trying to sort of justify why things happen to them because of certain things. And with this, it's like, there doesn't need to be a reason. It's her choice. And by not having that in there, it takes away that element. And I think that's really powerful in the way they tell the story, because it could easily be she's going to get an abortion because she got drunk at a party and she ended up being raped. And then that would be like, oh, well, then in that case, it's justified. But not having that is really powerful and a really strong decision, I think.
Anything else, guys, before we head to the scores?
No, I was actually going to say pretty much what Helen just said.
Oh, perfect. She took the words right out of your mouth. Well, let's head to the scores.
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog, the podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to our Flix Watcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Claire, with your recommendability.
I would give it 5 out of 5 for recommendability. I think it is just a wonderful, brave piece of cinema work. I think it's really easily accessible at the same time. I think it's incredibly non-judgmental, and it's also nice and short, so it's not going to take up anyone's time. And I think it's just very moving and a worthwhile thing to watch.
I gave it a recommendability score of 4, and the only reason that I didn't give it more is because I personally got a little bit distressed watching certain scenes in this movie. And yeah, I just always feel a little bit like if I get a little bit upset, then I don't know how much I'd want to recommend that to someone else. But I thought as a movie and as an experience, I thought it was absolutely phenomenal.
Helen.
Yeah, it's one that if you are recommending it, then I think you probably need to be quite clear with the story, because it's not a spoiler. You know, her journey in the arc is that, you know, that she's going to New York for an abortion. So as long as I think you're clear about what that is, so that you don't end up kind of recommending it to someone who's sort of been that through that and didn't want to watch a film about it. I just think it's one of those dramas that, through the kind of medium of filmmaking, you're able to tell these really powerful stories, and in a way that isn't normally really addressed, or when it's done, it's normally a man kind of doing it and the tone's all off and it's completely wrong. But this feels like a really strong female-led piece of cinema. And I think that it's on Netflix as well. Like, I'll be recommending this to all of my kind of female friends and people who I know are genuinely interested in film. So I'm going to go with a 5 on this one.
4.5 or 5, 4.8. Let's go 4.8. Yeah, there's definitely high recommendability. This is the second time watching it. And the first time I saw it was, I think it was on Sky, Stratton Now TV. And I'd heard the story, I heard the film, and I thought it sounded ace. And when it came to Now, I was like, I need to watch it now. And when it came to Netflix and you chose it, Claire, I was like, I wasn't like, yeah, I was not jumping for joy, but I was like, yeah, I'm really up for watching that again. And I think there's a lot that I recommend it more, because I think there's a lot of people can get out of it. And it's great to hear that M was initially reluctant, wanted a bit of a turn to watch it, but then you got a lot out of it yourself. I think that just shows that other people will do. So repeat viewing score, Claire.
Yeah, so repeat viewing score, I'll probably go 4 out of 5, and similar reasons to what Em said, that because there are some distressing scenes and it is a very heavy emotional film, that it is not the kind of film that you want to rewatch multiple times a year or that you're going to be reaching to watch again. But similar to yourself, Kobe, I watched it at the end of 2020 when it was on Now TV, was really excited to watch it. I've thought about it a lot since, but I've never gone to rewatch it. And so by doing this, I'm so pleased I did rewatch it, because I got new things from the experience in a rewatch, and it reminded me of how much of a powerful film it is. And so I think I will watch it again in another year or two, because I think it really struck me about how much I want to go out and do and help people and be a, you know, social justice warrior. And so I think it's important to kind of rewatch these films that hit you emotionally like that, so that you remember those emotions.
So obviously, because I had never seen this before, I wasn't, unlike the rest of you, I've not in a situation where I'm watching it again for the second time now. But given the choice, I probably would watch this again. I've given it a repeat viewing score of 3, only because it did kind of remind me of past experiences. But I've kind of, because I've been through that in a sense of, well, I've seen it now, so now I know what's there. There is a strong possibility that I will watch this again. But it's one of those, because the subject matter is often quite difficult to watch, you know, especially where you've got scenes of her punching her own stomach. And I found that especially upsetting.
And the bruises afterwards.
Yeah. I thought I'd kind of go down the middle, but more towards the repeat viewing positive and give it a 3.
Helen.
Yeah, so I only watched this for the first time probably about 2 months ago. So it was still fresh in my memory, and I didn't feel as though I needed to watch it again. And like you said, it's not an easy watch. It's not one of the ones you're kind of going, oh, just in the mood for this, gonna put it on. You definitely have to be in the right frame of mind, and it was a very, moments of it really upsetting and really hard to watch. So I don't know when I'll probably watch it again, so I'm going to go down the middle with a 2.5. Possibly if a bit of time kind of elapses, I might go back to it, but it's not an easy thing to watch, so I'm not going to be in a rush.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 3, because I watched it twice within, I guess, the space of a year. I'm not sure when I'll watch it again, because I think it definitely justifies a second watch, but I'm not sure when that third watch will happen. Small screen score, Claire.
So I've only ever seen it on the small screen, both viewings. I don't know if it actually even got a UK cinema release because of COVID.
Yeah. I'm not sure it did.
No, I don't think it did either. I think it went straight to VOD in the UK. but I'm so high on this film. I'm giving it a 5 out of 5 because I think it was a great viewing experience at home. I live on my own and I've watched it both times completely on my own, and it made it that much more of an intimate experience because I felt like it was just me with the girls. I don't know how it would translate to watching it with an audience. I don't know if I'd feel more comfortable or less comfortable. So small screen, I think it's great.
We haven't actually talked about Skylar and their relationship and how she there's a support network with her and her cousin, who's not the ideal person to be supporting. You don't want someone, ideally you want to be able to turn to a more experienced adult or someone, but what do you guys make of Skylar and their relationship?
I love their unspoken dialogue. I think it works really well that it's not a sister, but it's also not just a random friend, that there is a kind of, you know, not unrequited love, unconditional love there with them being family. And I love that I don't think Autumn ever even tells Skylar that she's pregnant. I think Skylar just catches on and immediately she takes charge and she's like, I'm going to help you. We're going to take this money. We're going to get this bus. I will be the support that you don't have because I know that your family can't support you through this. And even when they're fighting and they're telling each other at the bus station to fuck off because they're annoying each other, there is that, you know, I'm here for you and you're here for me, and they don't need to say anything. That, you know, the handhold behind the pillar.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and just the way that, you know, the difference between the way men touch them and the difference between the way they touch each other is so gentle and caring and kind of not motherly, but that loving vibe. And I think it's really, it's just really nice, as always, to see female friendships on screen that don't end badly.
Small screen score.
I hadn't actually thought about whether this is something that I would have watched in the cinema, because it's such an emotional viewing experience. I kind of don't know how I'd feel if I watched this surrounded by people, like Claire just said. So I've given it a 4 because I feel like it's not a big bombastic movie. It's a very quiet, reflective movie. And I feel like really it is suited to more of a home environment where you can just sit and watch it and then reflect afterwards. Because this is a movie that sits with you as well. Like it's one of those that I don't think, once you've seen it, you won't forget it for a long time, if ever. So yeah, I think this is a movie that is more suited to a watch at home environment.
So what was the score? Sorry, I missed.
4.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I think because it's so intimate, it works really well on the small screen. I probably would have tried to go and see this at the cinema because I do try and seek out smaller films if I can, but I think in terms of like the viewing experience, it's fine on a small screen.
Yeah, I think I would have, like Helen, I would have gone to try and see this at cinema, but it would have been like a Sunday when I went out for a double or a triple bill. And this probably wouldn't have been the finale in the day, but it would have been one I tried to catch up with. So, but yeah, I think small screen works fantastic. So I'm going to go for a 5. Engagement score, Claire?
So still on the high side, but I'm going to go a 4 out of 5. I think if it's going to lose you, it's going to lose you in that kind of opening 10 minutes or so. I think once you know that she's pregnant and once you see her first appointment at the women's health clinic, I think that's the point. When you get that far in, you're in then. I imagine it would be quite difficult to turn off after that point. But this is also a film that on paper is a very me film. So I wouldn't turn it off.
One thing I was just thinking now about the women's health clinic was when she took the first pregnancy test. And you can tell she bunked off school to go to this place where she can get some help and some advice. And she's like, is that a test from the supermarket?
Yeah, she could have just done that herself. She went there for medical help. She wanted a doctor and a nurse to take her under their wing. And she got a box kit.
Probably paid like triple the amount for it as well. That was probably more of a shock.
Engagement score.
So I gave it a 4 as well, only because I feel like, because it does have, like Claire said, a bit of a slow start. But then I think once you do get involved and invested in this movie, I feel like it would be very, very difficult to turn it off because you kind of want to know what happens to this girl. You become invested in her and her story. And honestly, you kind of start to feel a bit protective of her and you want to know that she's okay. And, you know, throughout the whole movie, I was... especially when, you know, they're falling asleep at like tube stations and stuff like that because they've got nowhere to sleep. And this is over like a 3-day period in New York City, like one of the biggest cities in the world, these two teenage girls, and they've got nowhere to go. And I was just like literally like begging the screen, like, please, will someone help these girls? Like, just give them some money or buy them a hotel room or give them some food or something.
She was offered, Autumn and Skylar was offered help with
a volunteer house.
Yeah, that's right. And they turned it down, or she turned it down on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't know. I felt like I thought it was wiser than to turn down Jasper's help initially when they landed at New York. And to be honest, I was thinking myself, I've been to New York, landed there myself and two other guys. And we're all three of us like, sorry, what? What do we do? So I can imagine the similar kind of thing with like two young girls who are like, I'm here for a specific purpose, and it's daunting, for want of a lighter word. It's super daunting.
And I get why she turned, like, because as an adult, I'm screaming at the screen, take the volunteer house, that they will look after you, go like take the help. But we've seen her be lied to by the previous women's health clinic. We've been shown that her family life, whether it's her father or her stepfather, is not stable and not supportive, and pretty much any adult in her life is a negative interaction with her. So you completely understand why she wouldn't trust this adult randomly offering her help, because society's told her it's not going to end well.
So what was your engagement score, sorry?
4.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm also going to go with a 4. It's one of these films where there's not that much dialogue, and we've already spoke about it. It's very much that kind of reflective piece. So you're almost kind of reflecting as you go along. And yeah, it's quite a strange experience to be going on this journey with her. So it's a 4. Like, it's... you'll know when you watch it whether it's going to be for you. So it's one that you're obviously going to stick with, but also there's not that much happening. Does that make sense?
The actor's name is Sydney Flanagan, who plays Autumn, by the way. She's not been in any of the films I can see at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm going for 3.5 because I think the second time I watched it, I wasn't as like glued to it as you could think, because it's kind of sparse, as everyone said. So I could kind of dream in and float in and out on Twitter and Instagram at the same time and wait for the kind of more salient bits to occur. That gives us an overall score of 4.11250. Nice.
Pretty good.
Absolutely. So guys, do follow us on Twitter, everyone who's listening, because we do put a tweet out before we go into recording and ask for your opinions, and look out for a tweet like this. We're reviewing Never Really, Sometimes Always with Claire, Ellen Hope, and Emil Dalt from W Rated and Verbal Diorama. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts, and a score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out. I wasn't expecting anything from this because it's a small film, but we did get a response. Claire, do you have it up?
So this is from The First Run, and they said 5, great, devastating film, which completely agree.
Yeah. Guys, Claire, can you sign off by telling everyone where we can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to the listeners.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Claire Ellen Hope, Claire without an I, and you can find W Rated there at W Rated Pod.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Verbal Diorama.
Well, thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.